Yeah, please.
This week's parasha is two long parashas, parashas Matos and Masei. I'd like to focus on something we're doing in the Gemara as well in the afternoon, and to clarify some very, very strange, interesting halachas. Apparently seems strange, with the halachas of an Ori Miklot. Okay? So the Ori Miklot, you're all aware, is a case where somebody, according to the Mishnah, is chopping wood. Machlekes in the Mishnah is exactly what happens, but certainly it was an accident, the blade of the axe fell off and killed somebody accidentally, or a person climbing up a ladder, actually going down, okay, it's going to be Derech Yerida, it's going down the ladder, and as he goes down the ladder, he slips, or the ladder falls down, and he kills somebody underneath. So the Torah says you've got to go to Golus. Now, go to Golus is not just relocating.
Thank you.
Go to Golus is not relocating. It's not just moving from one side of town to the other, or moving from one city to the other. An Ir Miklot, the Gemara talks about, is a place where it's a small city. You've got to make sure you have enough variables in to buy. They can't be big enough that people can be encouraged to be there. In other words, it could be a successful person with a very, very successful business, a gabba in a shul, a rav in a shul, who knows what he's doing, and he could have everything going extremely well for him, and he falls down the ladder. He falls down the ladder. He's glad he wasn't looking. He falls down, and now he's got to leave everything behind. He becomes a refugee. Becomes a refugee. A refugee is a pitiful state. He's got to go to the place in Ori Miklot. He can't take his shirora with him. Even if he comes back afterwards, he loses his status that he had. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible thing. His gunless, his position. Al pi halacha. You see the Gemara later on, end of the second parak. Yeah. So you see, he loses everything. For what? What did he do wrong? He fell down the ladder, for crying out loud. That's all he did. So what's pashat over here of the Ori Miklot? What's the whole chema ha'is of the Ori Miklot? Number one. Secondly, how does he get out of the Ori Miklot? How does he get out of the Ori Miklot? Says a posuk, he stays there until the Kohen Gadol dies. Right? What is this person thinking every single day that he is in Golus? Away from his family, away from his shul, away from his friends, away from his parks, away from his golf course, away from everything. What's he thinking every single day? Ribbono Shleilam, do me a favor, please give this Kohen Gadol a heart attack. Let him die as quickly and as painlessly as possible. That's what he's davening for. Here we have somebody who did something wrong. He killed somebody b'shogeg, and all he's focusing on is hoping somebody else would die. How does that help the position? How does that make him any better? What's the idea there? And furthermore, the pasuk says, you know what? It's a serious risk. The Kohen Gadol had a serious risk. People will daven he's going to die, and tefillah is very, very powerful. So what do we do? Says the Mishnah, the mother of the Kohen Gadol will prepare some care packages for him. Yeah, a few cookies, a couple of sewn scarves, maybe a kippas regat. She does some home little home things, and off she sends a little care package, much love for the mother of the Kohen Gadol. That's what she does. That's fantastic, right? And she sends it, and you know what? This homemade little package with a little heart on for the mother of the Kohen Gadol, says a Mishnah, that is going to make sure that nothing happens. Why is that going to make sure nothing happens? Well, he hasn't got chocolate chip cookies at home. He doesn't have his wife can't make him a kippah or make a nice scarf for him. What's the idea there?
That's
the beginning of the answer.
Cake with this.
So what's going on over here? That's going to stop it. He's got such a terrible mind. That's going to stop it. And thirdly, what's the idea behind the Goel Adam? Goel Adam is somebody the Machlekes later on in the Perek. There's a Machlekes whether Goel Adam, i.e. the relative of the victim, has a right to kill him or a mitzvah to kill him. What's the idea? It's a mistake. Forget or forgive. There's a mitzvah. You take a person who's a mitzvah to kill this person killed by Shoigeg. What did he do so bad? What's wrong? You're going to kill him. And it's a mitzvah to kill him, or you have permission to kill him. Let him go. Let him go to Golus. What's the deal? You know, let him run away to Golus. It's bad enough. What's the idea of giving him permission if he leaves the Ori Miklot to kill him? What's the idea behind it? What's going on over here? Now, it's a very, very sad phenomena. And Be'ez Hashem, you should never come into contact with people who are going through this. And that is the concept of rehab, rehabilitation. You get people who unfortunately they get dragged down in a society where it could be alcohol, it could be drugs, it could be even rage issues, and they go through a process called rehabilitation. And the rehabilitation is something people do not go happily for. They go there kicking and screaming. It's extremely painful to see yourself in the mirror and see exactly what your failings are. It is very, very, very hard. And people do anything not to do it. And therefore, sometimes the rehabilitation is actually made as a kind of a prison. Yeah, it's a kind of a prison to make sure people don't leave. And says the Stipler, this is exactly what Golus is all about. On one hand, Golus, according to what the Parasha says, is a place for the murderer to run away to and to be safe from being killed. On the other hand, we see actually it's an oinesh, it's a punishment. Why? Where do we see that? Because we see if it's only to save him from being killed, the Gemara says that when a person who dies in Golus, before the Kohen Gadol dies, he stays there buried in Golus. Now obviously it's not there to save his life. Okay, so obviously there as an oinesh for him until the Kohen Gadol dies. Furthermore, we see that even if the murderer makes a cash compensation with a family and comes to some agreement with them and says, listen, I'll pay you a huge amount of money, no, let me stay where I am, he can't do that. He cannot take payment for nefesh of ritzeach. He can't do that. So if it's clearly in order to save his life, here his life is not in danger at all, so why is it that he goes to Golus? Elamai says, the Stipler, what it is over here is a rehabilitation. Somebody did something terribly, terribly wrong, and therefore he has a terrible onus to go to Golus. But you can be quite sure he's going to run away at every opportunity. He's going to run back home, he's going to run back to his business, and run back to his shul, he's going to run all over the place. Says the Torah, we're going to put somebody outside with a shotgun and a sight. That if he sees you step outside the Orem Miklot, he has permission or even a mitzvah to shoot you. And therefore it is for your good that we put in this guy guarding you inside the Orem Miklot, that if you dare leave, you're dead. And therefore it's really a punishment which is for his good. It's fantastic to get a punishment in this world rather than the next. Yeah? And we have a Goel Adom waiting outside there to assure that you don't pull any fast one. You don't run away. So Ir Miklot, ultimately, very clearly, is a place of rehabilitation. It is an oinesh. It is a punishment to refocus, to understand who you are, what you've done wrong, and how you can become better. And we stick you in there, and we make a prison there that you cannot possibly leave. That is the Ir Miklot. What did he do wrong? Why does he get put through this terrible punishment?
Those elephants walking by is way too much.
What's the idea behind this? So Rabbi Isai, this is something which is a very, very difficult concept to understand. And the Western world teaches us things that we don't see from this parasha. And that is, there's a concept called, but it was a mistake. It wasn't my fault. It was a mistake. I didn't mean it. Al-chait shechaton al-fanecha bezodoin u-bishkogo. We make an al-chait for doing an avera on purpose, and al-chait for doing something b'shoigig as well. Why? What did you do wrong? It was a mistake. It was a mistake. The Apostle says in Mishli, Gam b'li das nefesh lo toiv. Even without knowledge, a person did something not good. In other words, listen very carefully. In other words, when a person does something which hurts another person unintentionally, he's considered a ritzeach. This parasha is all about unintentional killing. It says, "Bepesa b'lo evo." B'loi Rois never saw him, B'loi Tseide never trapped him, B'loi Mevakish also, he never meant to do bad, but four times in his parasha is called a Ritzach. In other words, if a person hurts somebody else with no intention whatsoever, he is considered responsible and liable. There's no reason why this accident should have happened. He is responsible and he is considered a Ritzach. There is no such thing as it wasn't my fault, it was a mistake. It is your fault. If something happened, you're responsible. Why? Because with more care, and with more attention, and with more sensitivity, this would never have happened. And it's because you don't care, and you're not sensitive, that is why you allow this to fall apart. The Gemara says that in the whole Eretz Yisrael there were three Ari Miklot. And in the whole Eivah HaYarden, across where only 2.5 tribes lived, there's also three Ari Miklot. Asks the Gemara, why is it that they have the same amount in Eretz Yisrael as the Eivah HaYarden? Answers the Gemara, because in Eivah HaYarden, beGilod Shechichi Rotzchim. Because in Gilod, there are a lot of murderers. Asks Tosfos, big deal. You don't make an Ari Miklot for murderers, you make Ari Miklot for people who killed B'Shoigeg. So what does that help you? So Tosfos answers, because we have professional people who kill, and they'll make out when they kill on purpose, as if they were B'Shoigeg. Okay? That's Tosfos. But Valam also say another Teretz. And they say, a wonderful, wonderful vote. They say, because there are so many murderers there, because people feel that meat is cheap, that they don't care about if Yenim dies, if the newspapers are full of this murder and that murder, this person got killed and that person got assassinated, then people are not that careful when they do a regular thing in the house, home improvement, and the ladder falls and they kill somebody, they're not as careful as they would be in a society where there's no such thing as fatalities, there's no such thing as murder. The fact that the environment is such that a person can kill somebody else, even those people that aren't in the mafia, and those people that aren't murderers, but the very environment is such that the care for another individual is not as great as it would be in a place where there's no murder at all. And therefore in Gilad, where there's so many murders, there are many more people who are killed B'Shoigeg as well. Why? Because B'Shoigeg happens because of people who don't have enough sensitivity for other people. It has to be that when you think about speaking to somebody else, you know, Chosn and Kala. Chosn and Kala, when they write letters to each other, right? It can take hours and hours. If I say this, will they think I mean this? When I say that, perhaps they'll take it the wrong way. And they cross it out and they write it over again. And they cross that out and write, I rip it up and start all over again. You know, how many times do they think before they say, write a letter to a Chosn, to the Chosn or to the Kala? How many times do they think? A husband comes home and he says a comment. A wife comes home and she says a comment. Right? Without any thought whatsoever. And it hurts the other person. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. So why did you do it? Why weren't you sensitive enough? I was once at a bris. And across from us, there was somebody who was supposed to give a Dvar Torah. And he wasn't prepared. So my father asked him, no, what are you going to say? Let's see what you're going to say before you say it. A bit of a sneak preview. So he said, oh, I just heard from the Moel a beautiful pot. The Moel says, why is a Zayda called a Zayda? No, Zayda is called a grandfather. Why is a Zayda called a Zayda? A Zayda is called a Zayda because a Zayda is from the Lashon Zaydu. Be here. To be here. A grandfather should be at a Simcha. A grandfather should be schlepping nachlas from a bris, from a chasna. So, my father, you do realize that one of the people here just lost their father, you know, the father of the babies, he just lost his father. Perhaps it wouldn't be the best idea to say, that's ridiculous. Before you say something like that, Baruch Hashem, he never did it. He could have been Hori B'Shoigeg. He could have killed somebody B'Shoigeg. Find out what you're doing. Find out what you're saying. Investigate. Before you're going up a ladder and you're afraid there's somebody else underneath playing underneath, check, there's nobody else underneath you, because you may fall down. The fact that you fall down B'Shoigeg and kill somebody is because you don't care enough. People drive their cars a lot more carefully in the street when their kids are inside the back of the car. Why? I like to see statistically how many accidents happen when our kids are at the back of the car and the kids are not in the back of the car. A wife is something else. But the kids in the back of the car, you know, turn right, turn left, I told you to, should have taken this. Oh, I'm telling you, going the right way. No, you're not. You should have asked directions. You know, well, black and never asked directions the only way. America was discovered because, yeah, no directions were asked. You know, there's stress in the car. But when children are in the car, I like to see statistically how much accidents are cut by the fact that you have a care package inside your car. You're caring about these children. And therefore you've got to be more careful. The fact that you can have somebody underneath a ladder and fall down and kill them is because you don't care enough about human life. And that requires teshuva. That requires rehab. That requires a total refocusing on three very, very important principles I'd like to talk about. The Mishnah says, Al shleisha devorim ha'olim ha'imed, ala teira val avoida val gemilas chasodim. Explains it to Tiferes Yisrael. The world, teira, shleisha ha'olim ha'imed, What's a world? World does not mean the world as we know it, the outside world, you know, how the world exists on three pillars. It means our own life. Olam hazeh and olam haba within ourself. Torah is ben odom la'atzmoy, between a person and himself. The chokhmah that he acquires. Avodah is ben odom la'mokoy, between him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And gemilas chasadim is between ben odom la'chaveri, between man and man. Those are the three principles a person's got to work on in order to make himself have a stable and successful life of olam hazeh and olam haba. This ritzeach that killed Sandy B'Shoigeg is lacking in these lessons. The fact that he can go along and destroy society, snuff out a life because it wasn't careful enough and sensitive enough about another person, has to refocus on these three things. He's got to focus on Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasadim. And all the three lessons are learned in this week's parasha. Firstly, Torah. The Gemara says, Talmid Shagolo, Megalin Rabbi Imoy. A Talmud that goes to Golos, he sends out the Rebbe with him. The Gemara carries on. Rabbi Shagolo, if a rabbi goes to Golos, Megalin Yeshivosoi Imoy. You've got to send the Holy Yeshiva with him. Now, boy, so let's take this. I don't mean Chas V'Shalom, there's any Rotzchim in the Mir, Chas V'Shalom, but just it's Baruch Hashem, the largest yeshiva today in Eretz Yisrael. Take, for example, Rachman Litzlan. Rachman Litzlan, it should never Chas V'Shalom happen. But a Talmud in Yeshiva Smir, in Beis Yisrael, goes along, and Chas V'Shalom, Chas V'Chalila, goes along and kills Sandy B'Shoigeg. Right? So here you have the Mir. It's not just a Beis Medrash. It's a whole shtick around the Mir. It's all the Dearest, and it's the falafel shops, and the barber shops, and everything around the mirror. It's a whole pumping world. That place is a factory of Torah. One person killed B'Shoigeg. What happens? Nebuch. And who killed? Not even such a great guy, because he's a person who's not so sensitive to somebody else. He killed B'Shoigeg. So what happens? He goes to Golos. What's the halacha? Megalin Raboy Imoy. His Rebbe goes to Golos as well. So what happens now? The Rosh Hashiva goes to Golos. If he goes to Rosh Hashiva's Shir, he goes to Golos. So here the Rosh Hashiva's got to go to Golos. Okay? So it comes to Shir Klali, there's no Rosh Hashiva. Where's the Yeshiva? Big sign outside the Yeshiva. Yeshiva's Mir is now relocating to Kiryat Gat. Okay? Not big, not small, Kiryat Gat. Okay, little village, Kiryat Gat, not too small, not too big, the whole Yeshiva moves there. Can you imagine what's going on? And there weren't big yeshivas. Can you imagine? All the yeshivas with all the sforim and all the shtenders and all the benches and prefab places with air conditioning and removal lorries and finding places for the boys to sleep and beds and cupboards. Everything. The whole computer system, you know, and hook up with a datot. Everything is moving up there to Kiryat Gat. Why? Because one bocha didn't quite do what he should be doing and check the ladder, or check when he's cutting wood, check that the blade wasn't good enough. And the whole yeshiva's got to go to Golos. Why is that? What's the makor to that? Says the Gemara, V'chai. In other words, the Pasuk says, and he should go there and he should live. So what? So what, he should live? Says the Rambam. The Rambam says, Os Talmud Shagola, Osaloi Kadesh Yichya. Rambam is in Perik Zain Hilchus Ritzeach Halach Aleph. Osaloi Kadesh Yichya, go there in order that he should live. The Chaye Bale Chochma, the life of those people who are Bale Chochma, who want to acquire Chochma, Umuvaksheho, and those who seek out wisdom. Beloi Talmud, without learning, Kamisa Chashuvim is like their death. In other words, why do you send the Holy Shiva? Because the Gzeres HaKosov, you've got to keep him alive. And if he goes there and does not have his yeshiva, he's not alive. Ask the Darke Musa asks already, where's he going to? He's going to a place of Ori Halavim, the Tamil Chachamim there. They have yeshivas there. So he didn't go to his yeshiva. He went to a different yeshiva. Big deal. He still has a chavrusa at night. He can still get a chavrusa during the day. What's the big deal? Still got svarim there. Not going to a midbar. He's going to Ori Halavim. What's the big deal? Says the Bale Musa, from here we learn that a person can have a chavrusa, and he can have a rebbe, and he can have a yeshiva, but you're a dead person unless it's your mahalach halimud. Unless it's your rebbe, and it's your yeshiva, and your chavrusas, you are not alive. You don't feel alive. And this is the chai, you've got to feel, oh, this is my mahalach. and any kind of minimal, any minimal amount of not geschmack in learning, or not learning, that person is considered dead. And therefore, since the gzeres hakosuf, the chai to keep him alive, you've got to have that yeshiva, with that Rosh Yeshiva, with those chavrusas, with that those kind of storm, and otherwise, you're killing him, and we have an obligation to keep him alive. Who is this boy ready? The God of Lador? No! That is v'chai. That is the sensitivity you've got to have to Torah. And if you think it's a fantastic zechus and a fantastic, you know, it's a bit exaggerated. Rabbi Yisai, people who know what Torah is, we all know what Torah is, but there's people who have such a hunger for Torah. There's a famous story, Navardika. You know, I like the Navardika Bochrim. There's a time when a whole yeshiva, the whole Navardik yeshiva was sent to jail in communist Russia. The whole yeshiva was caught, shut down and sent to jail. Can you imagine what the jail looked like in the Vadika Bochrim? Nothing could move them. Nothing. But they never had any sforum. But the jail system allowed them to have food packages sent in. They knew how big could the food packages be. So they sent a message to outside the jail, please send us 22 pieces of cheese. And each piece of cheese should be wrapped up with a page of the Gemara Makkos. Makkos are 22 daf. So it's 22 pieces of cheese. Every piece of cheese should be wrapped up with the Gemara Makkos. So the Shaila went to the Minskarov. Shaila went to the Minskarov. It's posh of design. How can you take, rip out a piece of Gemara, wrap up a piece of smelly cheese, and send it into the jail? What kind of thing is this? It's design. He answered back, this is a matzav or pikuach nefesh. If these boys do not have a Gemara, it's pikuach nefesh, kamisa chashuvim, as if they're dead. This is Torah. This is what we have to refocus this person went to Golus with. That Torah is so choshuv, that we are aware and we appreciate. That if you are wanting to learn, we will do everything. We'll relocate the entire Mir Yeshiva in order that you can get an extra mahalach, an extra geshmak in learning. Because that is how we value Torah. There's a story, Reb Chaim Ephraim Zaitchik, he was Rashiv of Navarduk, and he was sent to Siberia. He was an older man already, and there was no water source close to where they were. So every day, one person was either volunteered or forced to volunteer to go along a 4-mile trek right across slippery leaves and very, very difficult forest to fetch a big, big pail of water from a spring right across the forest. Nobody wanted to do it. Reb Chaim Ephraim heard that there's a Jewish family who lives out across near the edge of the woods. So he volunteered and he schlepped and he went across and he's schlepping this heavy, heavy barrel that was empty still. He walked right across all the leaves and across the trees and he cut himself and he got caught. And finally he comes to the edge of the forest and he sees a few houses there. And he searches desperately from one house to the other until he finds a house of the mezuzah. He knocks on the door and this woman sees this older man bent over, thin, emaciated, bleeding, starving. She opens the door and she gives him a piece of bread. He says, I don't want a piece of bread. Take the piece of bread back. I've got enough to eat. I'm starving for something else. Is your husband home? So yeah, my husband's at home. Calls her husband down. He's a poshuter person. You know, doesn't look like a Talmud Chochem. He's wearing this one of his flat hat. And he look at the Haknadi, see he was a Yid Bechlal. He said, listen, I need something. I'm starving. Do you have any Sforim in your house? So the man said, yes, I have one sefer, but there's no way I'm going to part with it. You know, this sefer is staying in my house. So the man said, listen, please, what do I have in life? I'm starving, I'm working, I'm in a forced labor camp. Please, I beg of you, please just give me a sefer, I'm dying, please. So the man said, okay, he brought down the Gemara, and the Gemara had Nedorim and Nozer inside the Gemara. He said, choose which one you want. He ripped out Nedorim, and he gave the man the back of the sefer, put it in his coat. And the prisoner said when he came back, he was exhausted. He was schlepping this big thing of water, completely, completely weakened. The smile radiated the entire camp. That was Torah. That was Torah. Without Torah, it's nishkaleben. It's nothing. Kamisa chashuvim. That is the first level for this week's parasha. This week's parasha is, if you want to refocus, you want to get a person to know what life is all about, you got to focus in that without the geshmak in Torah, this person is nothing. You know, people are willing to compromise what yeshiva you go to, what shiur you go to, what chavrusa you have, but are they willing to compromise what holiday they have, what hotel room they get, what car they hire? No, that they need to get the very best. We have to refocus. What's the real deal? What's it all about? So the first part is Torah. The Panovich Rav says, Al teros choshim adetonu, the Torah that you teach us, val chaim chein mecheses chein antonu, and for chaim that you bestow upon us. He said, Al teros choshim adetonu comes before chaim. Because if you don't have Torah, what's the point of having chaim? Panovich Rav. That is what we have to focus on. That is Torah. The next part is avodah. The next part is avodah. Avodah, the way we understand it, is tefillah. The Mishnah says as follows: Im actually nigma dina shel meis kohen gadol. In other words, a person killed somebody b'shogeg, a ritzeach killed somebody b'shogeg, and he's been taken to court. But the court hadn't yet paskened, have not yet decided and concluded whether this person killed b'shogeg or not. And in the meantime, what happened? A new kohen gadol got elected. The kohen gadol died, and they put a new kohen gadol there. Okay, and then they had a gemar din. Says a Mishnah, what happens then? He goes to Golus, and he only comes out when the second Kohen Gadol dies. So again, he killed, and then, while there's still a Kohen Gadol was alive, Kohen Gadol A was alive, they had not yet finished his din until Kohen Gadol A died. They took a new Kohen Gadol, B, and now he's going to be in Golus until Kohen Gadol B dies. Asks the Gemara, doesn't make sense. What did Kohen Gadol B do, in order that it seems to be his responsibility for what happened, and that the person, the Ritzeach, made daven that he should die, and he's entitled to do so, as it were, and it's likely he will do so, and only once he dies he'll go out. What did the second Kohen Gadol got to do with the Ritzeach? The first Kohen Gadol should have maybe educated him better, maybe daven better, but the second Kohen Gadol got elected then. What's he got to do with the Gemar Din of the Ritzeach? Answers the Gemara, he should have davened that Beis Din should find at the Gemar Din that he was potter. That's what he should have davened. He should have davened that Beis Din should have come out with the conclusion that it was not a shogeg, it was an oines. It was not reckless, but it was a total accident, and he's not had to go to Golos for that. A total accident is oines don't go to Golos for. Shremotka Kamenetsky brings a beautiful, beautiful maisa. He brings a maisa, Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Who doesn't know Reb Chaim Kanievsky? Poki b'shas v'poskim. Somebody came to ask him a shayla. And he said, come inside. Came asking a shayla, he asked him another shayla. And another shayla, and another shayla, and another shayla. Reb Chaim said to him, if you don't mind, I just got to get dressed, I got to go to a chasna. Give me a few minutes, I'll be happy to answer you more. He goes and changes into his Shabbos clothes, there's a Shabbos kapota and a Shabbos hat. And he comes downstairs, and the person carries on asking him, so walk with me. He walks with him. Goes right to Bnei Barak, he walks all the way to a hall. People wish B'chaim, Mazel Tov, Baruch Tia, Mazel Tov. They carry on asking questions. B'chaim says, hope you don't mind. A few minutes, I'll come back. I'll be back with you in a few minutes. What's going on? Only then a penny dropped. Reb Chaim was going to the chasna of his own son. But that doesn't mean that somebody can't ask me shailas at the same time. That doesn't mean, just one thing doesn't contradict the other. Say the Bani Musa. Why does this Kohen Gadol go to Golus? This is a highlight of his life. He's been waiting all his life to be chosen as a Kohen Gadol. People paid a fortune for this. He was chosen to be a Kohen Gadol. And in all that excitement, and all that's going on, and all the covered, he should be davening for this Ritzeach that he should have an easy din. And if he doesn't, you're responsible. And the Kohen Gadol's life is in danger, that this Ritzeach will start davening, that you will die, and perhaps will be successful. You know why? You deserve it as well, because you should have davened. That is a koyach of tefillah. Tefillah, we're responsible to think about every single person's pain, the ones that we know about. Think about it carefully. If we don't daven, the much we should, we're responsible. That is our avodah. That is a chelik of tefillah. But the maisa, what happens? What happens if the Ritzeach does daven? It's very, very dangerous. What do we say? So the mother of the Kohen Gadol gave him care packages. Yeah, food packages, chocolate chip cookies, his knitted scarf, whatever it may be. How's that going to help him? He wants to go back home. So I want to read it out. I want to tell you a beautiful, beautiful story. Rav Shabsky Yudlevich says this over many, many times. There's an 8-year-old boy called Hohan Diego. Owen Diego was he was stuck in a, he was an orphan, stuck in a Peruvian village. in Peru, a little village, an orphanage in Peru. His parents had died when he was very, very young. And he was brought up in an orphanage which was more like a hospital than a home. Everything very clean, very tidy, but hardly any toys. The food is very nutritious, but not very tasty. And Nebuch, he never had parents, he never had siblings. One day he's looking out the window, and he sees a sight that just made him stare. He saw a father and a mother walking together with a son and a daughter, dressed beautifully. And he'd never seen that before. He'd never seen a family unit walking together, smiling, laughing. And it made such an impact on him, he couldn't pull himself away from the window. He couldn't pull himself away, just staring right down the road, already disappeared. And he was dreaming, his 8-year-old boy was dreaming, oh, I wish I had such a thing. But he doesn't. And he had jobs to do, so he went to clean the floor. That was a job, to clean the kitchen floor. After an hour and a half, he collapsed on his bed, exhausted, and he fell asleep. And he had a dream. And he had a dream that he was living in a beautiful palace, and he had all around him, he had, not only did he have servants, but he had, more importantly, he had family. He had family all around him, a father, a mother, siblings. And he woke up and he said, I'm going to do everything I possibly can to buy that for myself, to buy myself a family. So he wrote a letter and he put it in an envelope and he addressed it to God. He addressed it to God. What happened? The postman goes in the sorting office and he sees a letter written out to God. No return address, no name at the back. What are you supposed to do? What are you supposed to do? Letter written to God. So today, by the way, you know, it's a shawl that's taken to the koisel. Yeah, a lot of people write letters to God and it gets taken to the koisel and put inside the wall. Yeah, honestly. Yeah, there's a whole process to do this. But not in Peru. So what do you do in Peru? So for some kind of strange reason, either it's superstitious or if you write God, he'll go to Rabinovitz and he'll put it in the koisel.
Yeah, he's put a post
sticker
on the...
He put a stamp on it. Yeah, sure. We'll come back to you, yeah?
You won't get to go with it.
Yeah, exactly. Long distance. So here we have a case where you can't open the letter. What do you do? And it's to open somebody else's letter without permission. Who knows, you'll get a curse or terrible thing. Anyway, this letter gets bounced around from one government office to another government office to another government office, backwards, forwards, until it lands on the desk of the Prime Minister. Okay? Lands on the desk of the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister, Espinosa. Apparently I searched whether he's a Prime Minister. I didn't know. I didn't find it. Maybe somebody else, a different name. Not quite. Can't be Espinosa because it isn't a Prime Minister called Espinosa in, as far as I've researched, in Peru. But anyway, there's a Prime Minister, a very, very well-known Prime Minister. It's a true story, absolutely true. He goes in his private chambers, takes his silver letter cutter, opens it up, envelope cutter, opens it up, puts his reading glasses on, and he reads the following letter, and I quote, Dear God, my name is Juan Diego, but I'm sure you know that because you know everything. I'm 8 years old and live in an orphanage. I miss my mother and father and really want a family very badly. Please help me. You're the only one who possibly can. Your son, Juan. He reads this letter. What do you do? He called all his advisors in and he said, I want an investigation who this boy is. Find me this boy. And they look here and they look there and they finally trace this boy, find out where this boy is. They go to the orphanage and you've got these government officials there in beautiful clothing. Waiting outside the orphanage is a stretch limo of the Prime Minister. This little boy goes in a stretch limo, his face is peering out of the windows, and he gets taken to the Prime Minister's office. With a little suitcase behind him. He walks out the Prime Minister's office. Prime Minister says, please sit down. He sits down, his little boy, his little legs dangling on a chair, has a meeting with the Prime Minister. And the Prime Minister was really impressed. This boy is a sweet boy. He's lonely, he's got nobody in the world. He calls his wife in, he calls his children in, has a little discussion with them, and they decide they're going to adopt him. And this boy got adopted by the Prime Minister. What's the idea behind this? What's the idea? What's the summer story? So Rishabsi Delevich says to Rishabsi, Koroiv Hashem Nechol Koirov. Hashem is close to all that call you, b'chol asher yikru'uhu, be'emes, absolutely. If you daven, absolutely. If you know there's nobody else in the entire world that can help you. If you daven with such 100% concentration and dedication to Rabbeinu Shleilam, your tefillahs will be answered. What did these chocolate chip cookies do? According to this pshat, they didn't stop them from davening. Of course they davened. But it wasn't 100% be'emes anymore. Because there was a tiny agenda that they'll get these food packages. And that way, it was 99.999% MS, not 100% MS, and that completely took away all the sting of this tefillah. That is what they did for you. That is koyach tefillah. You daven 100%, nothing can stop you. 99.999 doesn't have the same effect. And that is why they sent these care packages. That is one idea. But I want to go one stage further. There's a beautiful story I want to read out from Ari Levin. Zeiche Tzadik Levrocha. Rabbi Ari Levin took upon himself to visit Jewish inmates, mostly members of the Irgun, held under British rule prior to Israel's statehood. He became like a father to those prisoners, bringing them food, clothes, and love. For years, despite sweltering heat and frigid rains, he never missed a Shabbos visit, save one. Once, in the midst of a Shabbos service, a very excited messenger called him out of the prison. Rabbi Ari's daughter had become paralyzed and the doctors were helpless. He was needed for support at home immediately. I think this daughter was Rabbi Yashav's wife. Okay? After the Shabbos, an Arab messenger was sent by the concerned inmates to inquire what tragedy interrupted the weekly visit. The next Shabbos, despite the enduring tragedy at home, the rabbi went to the prison as usual. Normally, during a Torah reading, prisoners would pledge a few coins to charity. This week the donations were far different. I will give up a week of my life for the sake of Rabbi Ari's daughter, the first convict pledged. Another prisoner announced they would give up a month from his. Each one called to the Torah up the previous pledge until the last prisoner cried out, "What is our life compared to Rabbi Ari's anguish? I will give up all my remaining days for the sake of Rabbi Ari's daughter." At this unbelievable display of love and affection, Rabbi Arya broke down and wept. Miraculous as it may sound, that Saturday night, Rabbi Arya's daughter began to move and within days was fully recovered. What is this story? This story is something very, very powerful. These boys in the Irgun, they were very tough people. They were very, very tough people. You know, they weren't scared of anything. They were toughened. They were tortured. They were put in jail. The sensitivity they had was lit by Rabbi Arya. Rabbi Arya showed them such love. Rabbi Arya showed them such dedication. Rabbi Arya showed them such care that they're willing to give up their life for the sake of Arya's daughter. These toughened people, he was willing to give up their life for the Rebbe's daughter. This is what's going on over here with the mother of the Kohen Gadol giving care packages to the people in Aron Miklat. These people in Aron Miklat see how the mother of the Kohen Gadol cares about them. How the mother of the Kohen Gadol cares about her own son. These people are not going to daven anymore. Chas v'shalom, the Kohen Gadol should die. They'll daven, the Kohen Gadol should live. Because their life is nothing compared to the tzar of somebody else. They'll become so sensitive. They'll become so perfected in Gemilas Chasodim that they won't even daven anymore. They see when somebody cares about them, they'll care about somebody else. So here we have somebody who deserves to go to Golus. He did something terribly, terribly wrong. He killed B'Shoigeik. He wasn't sensitive to somebody else's life. In this week's parasha we taught, he's got to go there. He's forced to go there. If he leaves, he gets killed. He's got to focus on Torah. He's got to focus on Avodah. And he's got to focus on Gemedes Chasodim. This, unfortunately, is a koyach when people go and don't care enough about other people. One's got to focus on those three things. If you end up hurting somebody unintentionally, insulting somebody unintentionally, then it's because, unfortunately, we can say you didn't care enough. Oh, come on, that's ridiculous. I mean, the person, I never realized. You should have realized. You should have looked into it. You know, if a husband insults a wife, or a wife insults a husband, or a father's too harsh on a daughter, and a daughter is rude to the father, whatever it may be, didn't mean it, and it's in the spur of the moment, and you're not under stress I'm under, it's no excuse. It's no excuse. You go to Golus for such a thing. One's got to be very, very aware of this, and Ezra Hashem, if you are aware of this, the Kosh Baruch would take us out of our goddess, which is not neither Mises Kohen Gadol, but Ezra Hashem, the Bias Goyal Tzedek Mahir of Amin.